Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hey, metalheads, this is Doral Pesh, and you're listening to Cobras and Fire, and rock is not dead, so rock on and stay metal.
You're listening to the Cobras and Fire podcast, part of the Decibel Geek podcast empire, featuring special guest, the Queen of Metal, Doral Pesh.
Every time I see your face, I see the light. Every time I call your name, I know it ain't right. I'm on the run again, don't know if I could ever make you see. Maybe I feel no pain, but I need you to keep me company.
I'd like to welcome to the program the Queen of Metal, Doral Pesh. Doro, you are celebrating 35 years with a double album, Forever Warriors, Forever United, which comes out on August 17th. How are you today?
Yes, I'm pretty good. Yeah, Paco, I just came back from Wacken. We played two shows in Wacken, and we did a big anniversary show, and it was awesome. Had many guests and, you know, lots of fire and pyrotechnic, and it was awesome. And it was sold out, 80,000 metalheads from all over the world. So it was really, really exciting. And we played a couple of new songs from the upcoming album, and we had a great guest on the stage, Johan Hegg of Amon Amarth. We sang two songs together, and it all worked out. No, didn't mess up a thing. Everything was like, perfect,
How many times have you played Wacken?
Oh, man, I think I at least was in Wacken 20 times, and sometimes I just sang the Wacken anthem, We Are the Metalheads, and sometimes I was a guest on somebody else's show. Last year, I was actually a guest on the show of Amon Amarth, and we sang their song on the last Jom's Viking album. It was called A Dream That Cannot Be. And they asked me if I want to hop on stage and, you know, play that song, sing that song. And I did. And then I had a little bit of time to walk around, to talk to all my friends and other bands. And that's how it came about that we could record and film All For Metal. It was just a demo. And then, you know, and I saw Jeff Waters of Annihilator and Boyle Dane, which is unfortunately not anymore with us. It was the last time that I've seen him. And Johan Hegg, and everybody was there. And then I said, hey, I have this new demo and this new song. It might be on the record. And can we, you know, do you guys want to sing along and, you know, and do a video? And I had a little portable studio, so everybody was singing on it. So I had a little bit of time, you know, and then... the more people were singing on that song, we thought, okay, that should be the first video and the first thing. It makes people feel so good. Reminds me a little bit on All We Are. And of course, we played that in Wacken as well with a big choir. And people going crazy and, you know, singing along. And it's especially fun if you have a couple of beers before. Something on top of your lungs, you know. It doesn't have to be in tune, just has to be fun.
And of course, you're talking about Johan from Amon Amarth. You guys do a duet on the new record.
The line is very thin between love and hate. You know that you belong to me. You cannot fight your fate. We'll be right back.
How did that come together?
Yeah, actually, I did a couple of shows with Tommy Bowen, my old Warlock guitar player of the Triumph and Agony album. We celebrated the Triumph and Agony album last year. And then, you know, one time we had so much fun. We were jamming in our hotel room. Yeah, and then, you know, Tommy came up, like, you know, with this riff. And then we had this idea, if I can't have you, no one will. And then I sent it to Johan. I said, hey, Johan, there's a song in the making. You know, check it out. And then Johan wrote the verses, the lyrics for the verses. And then we did it. And it was a teamwork from Tommy, Johan, and me. And now it's actually the third single. And it's a beautiful video. Somebody made it. His name is David Havlener. And yeah, and it's a cool story around the whole song, and yeah, and it's one of my favorite songs on the album. It's very unique. It's and his rough voice is, you know, making it
sure.
Like, wow, you know.
No, it's a good track.
Cool.
You mind if I, you know, you mentioned Tommy Bolin. You mind if I go back and ask you a couple questions about Warlock?
Of course, love to, yeah.
Well, I first got into Warlock came on my radar with True as Steel. I know there was a couple records before that, but I honestly didn't get to hear like Burning the Witches even until I don't know the mid 2000s. But True as Steel was followed up by Triumph and Agony. That's the first record with Tommy Bolin on it, if I remember. And didn't you kind of like replace most of the band? It felt like with Triumph and Agony, you were trying to give Warlock more of an American metal sound and look. Is that fair?
We just did what we felt. It was not like, you know, planned and stuff. And
okay.
Then many people played on this album, like great people like Cozy Powell. And I must say, man, there were great players on. So maybe it sounded a little bit more, let's say, yeah, like more on or more professional. I think the first video of the Triumph and Agony album, All We Are, it was a bigger production than the stuff we did before.
Mm-hmm.
It was like low key, but the Triumph and Agony album, yeah, it was like, it was maybe more professional. We had a great studio, it was the Power Station studio, great players, and you know, and then Tommy Bolin I met, and he had so much fire, and I loved his like energy, you know, he was like, you know, he was a powerhouse and like bringing, you know, so much, you know, good vibes. And then I thought, yeah, and then I never planned on going solo. It was just, we got into
right.
some problems, you know, and I never wanted to be a solo artist ever. And then we had to change the name. So I thought, okay.
Yeah, why was it, was there the former members, was there some kind of lawsuit? I just don't remember hearing anything about it. Why couldn't you carry on as Warlock?
It was the former. I had two managers at the time. One American manager, Alex Grope. He came actually from Switzerland, but he had an American passport. He was great. And then we had a European manager, and he was actually a good friend of ours. And then he took the name. He had no right to do it, but he took the name because
okay.
he was the merch guy. So, you know, and then that was the first time that I felt people with a little tiny bit of success, some people, they go crazy. It's like, you know, you don't even know them anymore. And before we were really great friends, it was very supportive and stuff. And then he took the name and I thought, okay, no, let's go to court because he has nothing to do with the name. But, you know, it was sticky. It was the first time that, like, we metalheads were in a courtroom. I started yelling and screaming because I felt it was totally unfair. So I was removed out of the courtroom, and then we lost the name. And I couldn't believe it. I thought, man, you know. And then, you know, it took quite a while. At first, I thought, okay, the record company said, then call it Doro. Maybe the fans will know who it is and stuff, and they make the connection. And I thought, oh, I would love to still do Warlock, but it was impossible. So we called it Doro. And I thought, okay, and then the next record we call Warlock again, everything will, you know, get sorted out, of course. Yeah, and then that took 20 years. It didn't take 1 year, it took 20. So now I got the rights back to the name Warlock. But yeah, it was all sticky. And, you know, when we started as Warlock, hey, we were all like, you know, little kids, teenagers. We just want to play, want to make music, wanted to, you know, make the metalheads crazy. And we were like not into business at all. And then left and right, man, God, you know, there were, you know, tons of, you know, people who weren't our best friends, which we thought, you know, everybody supported, everybody's good people. But yeah, when a little tiny bit of success started happening, then some people lost their minds. And yeah, and that's how it came about. And then I had no, you know, I had no say in that Tommy wouldn't be in the band anymore. It was like, you know, the agency, the record company, the manager, everybody, like, you know, suddenly had, like, you know, they pulled the strings. And as an artist, back in the day, in the 80s and 90s, you didn't have so much power and freedom like you have now, which is great, you know. Like, now everybody says, hey, just go for it, do what you feel, you know best what the metalheads want. So, but in the 80s, 90s, you know, at first we just did our thing, but then the second record, Hellbound, it was already a different, you know, ball game. And then Twist Steel, that was when people tried to do a little bit more commercial sound, you know, radio-friendly, which we all, oh, no, not radio-friendly, you know. You know, for a metal band, that word, that was not, you know, not the way we want to sound. Yeah, and then Triumph and Agony, I felt, oh, this was a fantastic record. I really loved it. And yeah, and then the next record, yeah, we couldn't use the name Warlock anymore. And yeah.
Did
and
Tommy then, stay on for Force Majeure?
Nay, Tommy Hendrickson, who's now actually an Alice Cooper, but Tommy, he didn't stay on actually. And it was not, you know, it was not my choice, but other people said, no, it needs to be different. And like, oh, God. And then, you know, and I thought, wow, you know, I love Tommy. I love his playing. He's wild, you know, and, you know, he's, you know, great energy. And then, yeah, so.
Does that mean maybe it was somebody else's idea to do Whiter Shade of Pale?
No, that was my idea. Okay. That was my idea because we had the whole record was done. And then I felt, man, one song is missing. We need another song, you know, like another anthem, something, you know. I think there's something missing, like All We Are or Für Immer, which was the first song in three languages. And then I went into a record store and I was weeding through records. It was Tower Records. They always had, you know, 24-hour open. And, you know, I was just like going into Tower Records every weekend, you know, just to relax and to see, you know, what's new. Yeah, and then I saw some old records, and there was one band, which probably you guys don't know anymore. It was called Procol Harum.
Oh, yeah.
The Widest Pit of Fail, you know. And when I grew up to that song, I loved it so much. So I went to my producer and I said, Joey, I would love to do this song. He said, really? And he said, well, could you sing it? I said, I don't know. Let's try it. And then 6 o'clock in the morning, we were in our studio and we wanted to just give it one go before the next morning, you know, and like end of the day, just like fiddling around. And we played White as Shade of Pale with great people playing on Bobby Rondinelli on drums, Tommy Hendrickson, who is now actually in Alice Cooper, he was great, and John Devon, actually, who is now, he is in, he's in Dokken. Yeah, so gave it one go. No? And and we played it, and that version was so great. It was so much magic. We thought, wow, man, that sounds great, and the singing was great. So the next morning, we wanted to do it for real. And I tell you, we listened to the version 6 o'clock in the morning, and that was the one.
Get the lights and then go. Turn cartwheels across the floor. I was feeling kind of seasick. The crowd called out for more. The room was dark and hollow as the ceiling flew away. Yeah. When we called out for another drink, the waiter brought.
And then I thought, wow, I definitely want to put it on our record. And yeah, and then it became the first single, the first video. But that was, that was my choice. But but back in the day, the record industry was so huge. And there was sometimes so much pressure on, which is not anymore the case, which I love now. It's so much freedom and I love it. But back in the day, and everything, you know, was like, was discussed by many, many people. So sometimes, you know, you had no choice. It was actually, you know, losing your record deal completely or giving up music or, you know, or like, kind of like try to survive and do here and there a little compromise, even though I thought our demos always sounded better and the mix. Sometimes a little bit too commercial, I thought, but, you know, here and there. But that was the time in the 80s and 90s. I'm sure many bands went through that.
How did Gene Simmons get brought in to produce the next solo album just called Doro?
Yeah, actually, I introduced Kiss on the Monsters of Rock Festival in Germany in 1989, and I was a big Kiss fan growing up, and I loved Gene, and I loved Kiss. So a promoter called me, and and he said, hey, I remember you're a big Kiss fan. You want to introduce Kiss on stage? And I said, oh, I would love to. So that was the first time that I met Gene. And then somehow this idea grew, maybe doing a song or maybe, writing a song together. So I talked to my manager. That was the good guy, the American guy. And I said, Alex, I would love to, to maybe do something with Kiss. And he said, hey, Dora, they don't have any time for that, And I said, yeah, I just was asking. So a couple of months later, I got a phone call from my manager. And he said, Dora, get out of bed. There's somebody who wants to meet you. And I said, who is it? And he said, no, it's a surprise. And I thought, maybe it's some friends or fans from Germany. So I hopped into the taxi, didn't even take a shower, no makeup on, which usually I always put on makeup, but because he said it's so urgent, just come, So I went to 57th Street to the Parker Meridian Hotel in Manhattan. And outside, my manager was waiting. He said, are you ready? And I said, yeah, but I want to know who it is, And he said, Gene Simmons. I said, what? Are you crazy? You didn't tell me that Gene Simmons is waiting there for me, and I didn't even put my makeup on. And, he said, well, he said, man, yeah, he wants to meet you, and, let's check it out. And so I had to go 3 times around the block because I was so nervous. My knees were shaking. And then after 3 times, you know, Alex said, hey, Gene is waiting. You know, are you ready? And I said, yes, I am. So I walked into the hotel and he was sitting there and we were talking. And he said, so I heard you were, you know, thinking of doing a new record. And he said, so what do you want to do? You know, how do you want it to sound? And yeah, and then we started doing a little bit, you know, doing a couple of songs. And then he played me a couple of songs, which are now, I just met Gene a week ago. He gave away The Vault, you know, all the songs he's ever written. And there are many songs, you know, which I recorded on this record. Yeah, and then we got along great. And we started in New York, and then we recorded the whole record in L.A. And actually, Tommy Thayer, who's now in Kiss, he was the co-producer. And we did it in the studio where Kiss recorded Heart in the Shade. It was called Portrait Studio. So it was awesome. And me being a big Kiss fan, I tell you, it was a dream come true. And he was so nice, so kind, very, very caring. And, you know, it was, yeah, I had the time, you know, of my life, I tell you. And
You recorded a Kiss song on there, Only You.
Only you.
Were you familiar with the original version before you recorded it?
Yes, I was. Do you
like music from The Elder? Just get your opinion on that album.
Yeah. Actually, I know that many people, they feel like, you know, it's like a different album, but I loved it. Yeah, I loved it. And then Gene, he wrote different lyrics for Only You. And when I heard that version, the demo, which then we recorded on my record, oh, man, I thought, so cool. I love the chord changes. I love the melody. I love the lyrics. But, yeah, but, you know, when you're a fan, sometimes you love even, like, the, you know, the stuff which is a little bit out of the box. I'm still a big fan of Kiss Alive, too. But, yes, I like the Elder album as well.
I do, too.
Yeah, you too.
Oh, yeah, very much, yeah.
Cool.
So, and if I heard you right, you have, Gene gave you a vault.
Man, he said, how did you know? Yeah, man, I couldn't believe it because I was invited to be a guest on, you know, on this day, and, you know, we were talking to fans. Yeah, and then he said, hey, Doro, come with me, and then he gave me the vault, and I didn't expect it. It was so cool, and, you know, and wow, I was very touched. And 1 week before, I was playing the Masters of Rock Festival in the Czech Republic, a great festival too, and Gene Simmons was playing, the Gene Simmons band. And then, you know, and then he said, hey, hop on stage, and we did War Machine together, and that was great fun too. And
I'm gonna die, 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 die.
Want to check it out, it's on YouTube, and yeah, that was cool. So yeah, so it's great to stay connected, but yeah, but doing this record together, that was like, you know, once in a lifetime, you know. And yeah,
I really enjoy the song Mirage. That's probably my favorite song on that. Might be one of my favorite songs of yours, but
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, that's a beautiful song. And by the way, in the internet, I saw on Blabbermouth, they said, because I told everybody about the mix, it was not coming out right. And then Gene, he was all night mixing the song, and it came out great. And then when I listened to it, I had tears in my eyes. And in the internet, it said, when I wrote it, I had tears in my eyes. But that's not true. Gene Simmons wrote the song Mirage, and it was maybe somebody, you know, made a mistake writing it. So, but yeah, Gene wrote the song Mirage, and yeah, what a cool song. And yeah, I think he's a great songwriter and yeah, a great singer. And yeah, and I love him as a person so much. He's so cool, and yeah, with and without makeup. Yeah, I love him. Yeah.
Well, let's talk about what you got going on now. Forever Warriors, Forever United, once again, is the name of the double album. Comes out August 17th. This is your first double album, if I understand it right, correct?
Yes, yes. It's album number 20, and the first double album has 25 songs on it, and lots of like stadium anthems, like All For Metal or Turn It Up, and lots of fast songs like Bastardos and this duet, If I Can't Have You, No One Will, with Johan Heck, and yeah, and some other great soulful songs and some ballads and one song. We have a great solo from Doug Aldrich. He's on the song Heartbroken, mm-hmm. and God, he plays so great. And I always loved him in Whitesnake or Dio or now the Dead Daisies. And yeah, and I'm so happy that he played so fantastic. And yeah, and there's one great ballad on it. I wrote it with David Bryan, the piano and keyboard player of Bon Jovi, and we wrote this ballad together. And it's a while ago, and I always thought, man, it's such a beautiful song. It's not heavy, but it's beautiful. And that's on the record as well. And it's called It Cuts So Deep.
The first time you took my heart was the first time I walked through the dark. The first time my heart almost died. The first time I survived. Everything here still reminds me of you. The dreams of your touch make it hard to get through. All the words that I said 'cause I knew I'd never get over.
Dark romantic stuff is on there as well, and yeah, and two songs for Lemmy are on. One is called Living Life to the Fullest, and I wrote it for Lemmy to honor him, to give him thanks. I loved him so much too. And there's a Motorhead cover version on. It's called Lost in the Ozone, and I think Lemmy wrote beautiful lyrics. I think he was such a fantastic lyricist, and this song always like,
agreed.
When I sing that, like, I was like, man, I get teary eyes. It's so deep and very, very sad lyrics, but yeah.
Well, he left us a lot, you know, but
yeah.
Tommy Bolin, of course, you mentioned came back. How did that all come together? Because, you know, I instantly recognized the name because of Triumph and Agony, but
yeah, actually, some journalists, they told told me, like, oh, it was about 2 years ago or 1.5 years ago. They said, hey, oh, the Triumph and Agony album, it will be 30 years ago. Do you celebrate? And I thought, oh my God, that's right. And usually when I'm on tour or when I'm in the studio, you know, I'm so mixed up in things. And then I thought, man, I didn't even think of that. So I called Tommy and I said, hey, Tommy, you know, Triumph and Agony is almost 30 years, you know, old. We have to celebrate. He said, oh, yeah, I was waiting for this phone call. Let's do it. So we at first wanted to do it in little clubs. And then the first gig we did was Sweden Rock in front of 60,000 people playing the whole record in its entirety. But it worked out great. It was a great show. And then we did more shows and we did Norway Rock. And then we said, hey, let's do a tour in the States. And we did last year. We played, you know, a couple of shows, and it was so awesome. And yeah, and now we are playing a couple of shows in Europe where we only play the Triumph and Agony album. It's actually coming up in a couple of days in Spain, Leyenda del Rock. And yeah, and Tommy is a guest. She was a guest on the Wacken show and on some other festivals. And we're going over to play the UK Bloodstock Festival, and Tommy will be on board. And I will play with him and Chris Caffey, the Prague Power Festival in Atlanta. It's the 6th of September, and I'm so, you know, so excited about that. So it will be a lot of solo stuff and, you know, and wild madness, energy, and yeah.
Any talk of an American tour yet, or?
Yeah, it's in the making. It's in the making. We don't have any dates confirmed, but definitely a long tour. And like next year, I want to tour nonstop. And yeah, and of course, you know, play all the big cities and then the smaller cities. And yeah, yeah. So as we speak, you know, people are working on it, and I'm very excited. And yeah. That's definitely coming. Maybe end of this year, but definitely beginning of next year. And yeah. Mm-hmm.
I saw you a few years back in St. Paul, Minnesota, and it was actually Valentine's Day, so I remember the date, and you weren't feeling the best. Anytime you talked to the crowd, it was clear that you had a bit of a cold or a sore throat or something, if you know what I mean. But when you sang, you delivered, you sounded amazing. And I guess I want to compliment you in a way, because this sticks out to me. Because a few days earlier, I don't know if you've heard of Beyonce. Beyonce, she lip-synced the national anthem at our presidential inauguration, and she said it was because it was a bit cold and she didn't want to ruin her voice. And I just thought of it was so close to when I saw you, I thought about that, and I'm like, you know, here you are killing it in a club. I guess, Doral, really all I'm saying is that you're more talented than Beyonce.
Oh, that's like, oh, I think she puts on a hell of a show. And
yeah,
like,
she can dance.
But I guess that's so metal, you know, and metal is all more real. We don't need so much big show. You just do what you love and, you know, and get the fans going. And I tell you, when I see the fans, I can be sick as a dog, which I'm always sick on tour when we're touring in the winter time. I'm always sick and, you know, and I think, oh God, I will die. But then when I see the fans, when I hop on stage, everything is great. I don't feel any pain, nothing, you know. I can even break a leg, it wouldn't matter. It's always cool when I see the fans. And it was so cool in St. Paul. I remember some fans, they made up a new melody for the middle part of Für Immer, and I loved it so much. And thank God our drummer Johnny D, he was filming it. Sometimes he's always filming little things of All We Are or Für Immer, and the fans were making up this melody. And afterwards, after the show, I walked up to the fans. I said, what was that? They said, well, we made up this melody because we thought that is metal. And I thought, oh my God, that's so metal. You really think of a melody to put into a song. And ever since, I'm always doing it. I'm doing it as exactly as they did it. And it's wow. The coolest part. And the fans all sing along. And there was the fans in Minnesota, St. Paul. And there's one guy, his name is Mixter. And, you know, he's one of the diehard fans. And I tell you, I only live for the diehard fans. And I only survived all these years because of the fans and of the support of the fans and, you know, and of all the things, you know, we can share together, you know, in good times and in bad times, you know, especially then, you know, we stick together. So, yeah, it's like, Yeah, it's all for the fans. And St. Paul, I remember. Well, I think the place doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah, correct. They condemned the building. I don't know if you recall, it had like a big pole right in the middle of the front of the stage.
Yeah, of course.
It was great.
We didn't care. It was so good vibes in there, so great crowd. And yeah, many great places. Even B.B. King's in New York, I always love to play. It's no more. And so many places are no more. So we definitely have to fight the good fight, no? In my heart, I always have these memories, and I will never forget that,
Doro, this has been a pleasure. If I was to go back in time and tell the teenage me that I was going to be talking to you one day, he would probably freak out. It's been fun chatting with you. Thank you for sharing all these stories. Of course, people look for Forever Warriors, Forever United, which comes out on August 17th. And obviously any news about any tour dates, they can find it at your website. Yes.
Yes. Yes. On Facebook or doro.us. Yeah. And I will let you know as soon as we have everything sorted out. And I'm dying to play all these songs live, and I want to see what the fans love the most, because with 25 songs, man, I can't make up my mind. I love them all, so the fans, they have to pick their favorites, and then we will play what they want. And of course, all the other highlights, We Are Burning the Witches to Emma, that's so what goes without saying. But yeah, I'm very excited, and thank you for having me so much, Bono. And hope to see you soon, or live,
Doro, honestly, thank you so much. This has been a big thrill for me. And I'll definitely keep an eye out and look for you on tour and catch you at one of these dates once you start kicking through America. And, by the way, love the record.
Oh, good. Oh, thank you for saying that. Oh, yeah, man. I hope the fans will love it as well.
I'm sure they will. The great thing about the metal crowd is that they actually listen to new music, so.
Yeah, and they still buy records or vinyl or CDs. I love that. That's probably totally different from the pop world, but and we still put all this stuff out in picture discs and
nice
packages or something.
It's awesome. It is.
Yeah. Good. Okay, well, good. Thank you very much for having me, and talk or see you very soon, and all the best, and take care.
Same to you.
Thank you. Okay.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye. Thank you, Michael.
I need some hope to keep me alive.
Broth, right? Cold broth.
Correct.
No? Yeah. Cold broth. Yeah. Okay. I will do it right now. Okay.